So, with this problem, two ways you could do it. One, parameterize the three-quarter circles that make up the boundary. Two, do an actual flux integral. So this time, instead of doing the boundary curves, we'll opt for method two. Okay. Flux of curl equals circulation on boundary, in words. Okay. Symbols, let's see. Okay, so The circulation formula is like that, right? I was getting ahead of myself. Okay. That would be the circulation. Circulation of this field around the boundary loop. And which way would it go? Well, I said that the normal, the positively oriented normal vector, I defined it to be going that way. So that's the orientation of my surface, which forces the boundary loop to be the quarter circles going around that way. What I've got for my surface is an octant of a sphere of radius 5. Okay, so here's the flux of the curl. Okay, so now we're going to integrate over the whole surface S. Oh, I keep forgetting. But we have a different field. This nabla cross F is notation for the curl of F, right? So we're getting the flux of the curl. I was talking about there. All right, so let's figure this out. First of all, the curl. So think of it as you've got some partial derivatives that you're going to apply in a funny way. Okay. So either write out a determinant thingamajig or do some other method. I do my 1, 2, 3 thingamajig. If you like the determinants, it would look like this. So if you don't like the determinants, just pretend I didn't write that. Okay, let's see. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Okay, 2, 3, 1. 2, 3, 1. 3, 2, 1. Okay. 3, 2. And then 3, 1, 2. Okay, a lot of zeros here. Okay, there's a 2z, so that's not entirely trivial. There's a 1, there's a 0. So There's the curl.
I think I got all six of them.
Any questions about that?
So it is what it is. I just have to get used to this. I don't use this very much until it's the end of this, near the end of the semester. I'm in Calculus 3. I get a little rusty, then I get better as the last month of the semester goes on. I practice it more and more. I get faster and faster again.
All right, so we're going to have this field. And remember, the curl is this other field where the original field kind of bends around this field. So you kind of imagine this field is kind of pointing kind of this way, and then the original field F is somehow curling around it. That's the name curl. And that, corresponds to how the boundary loop kind of curls around the orientation vector field. Right? So what we're doing with Stokes' theorem makes some intuitive sense. Okay, now I need this guy. I got the curl, but I need to take the dot product with this thing here. So that's where we take the derivative with respect to our parameters. So this is really step three, right? Because we need the parameterization of the sphere, right? So we're going to have to back up. Go back to step two and get and parameterize the partial derivatives. Fortunately, we did a problem like this before with when I introduced flux integrals. Yeah, we did something with a sphere before, so I'm going to reuse that to save us some time. Okay. So this. Before we can get to that, we need the parameterization. So look at what I've got. I got this octant of a sphere here, right? I know it's an octant because each time I cut in half when I said each of the three Cartesian coordinates should be non-negative. So if I just use spherical coordinates and I make the spherical radius, rho, 5, then in spherical coordinates I have this. Now, the restriction that I'm on the just that one octant there, let's look at that closely. Okay, so as we turn from the x-axis towards the y-axis, we go 90 degrees and then we quit. So the theta is going to go from 0 to 90 degrees, or pi over 2 radians. And similarly, the co-latitude phi, we're going from the North Pole, and then we turn down 90 degrees to the equator, and then we quit. So phi is going from 0 to pi over 2 radians as well. Okay. So in terms of the spherical angular parameters, we're just integrating over a square. This is very nice. Let's think of the square, pi over 2 on each side. Okay. Then we can actually make sense of this, right? I knew I was going to parameterize spherically, so I knew I would be dealing with this. Ah, okay. What is this? Well, again, we did this before, fortunately. Okay, so what happens is the cross product gives you a ton of cancellation with cosine squared plus sine squared is equaling 1. And you get 25 from 5 squared times... a sine phi if you look at this, this is just the spherical little formula, right? You saw in spherical coordinates for the volume differential. We're just not going to have the d rho term. So the dA part comes out like that. There's just no d rho because we're doing area not volume. So this comes out, and the n part comes out to just be a unit vector pointing straight away from the origin. So it's going to look like these guys. The x, y, z's here, it's just without the fives. Okay. Now, if you want to prove this from scratch, yeah, it takes a while. We did a similar problem where we did the partial derivatives for this kind of thing. I think we had a 3 instead of a 5, but yeah, it can be done. It's kind of tedious to do it, so I don't want to bore you with going through it all again. Look back at the. Having done that, we're hoping you'll believe me that that's correct at least. We then have to put it all together. Right? Okay, so let's see. So we have that curl field dot n dA. Right? Now, I need to plug in my parameterization here into that z. So I have 0, and then what is z? It's 5 times the cosine of phi. So I have twice that, 10 times the cosine of phi, and a 1. I'm going to take the dot product with this thingamajig here. And then there's this stuff here, scalar multiples. Okay. So let's see how bad it is. All right, we're gonna have 10 cosine phi sine phi sine theta plus cosine phi. Times 25 times the sine of phi times d phi d theta. Okay. So we have that thing. And then we're supposed to integrate it over this square here. So... can be done by hand, can also be done with a calculator. So, at the end, we have It's some double integral, and the alternative was doing some three integrals, right, over three quarter circle loops. So that was the alternative. And we would have had to correctly parameterize those quarter circle loops as well. Make sure we were going in the right direction, all that. Okay. If I put the phi here, then that means I'm integrating first with respect to phi. If I had switched them and had the theta in there and the phi out there, then I would have integrated first with respect to theta. If you're doing the integral on your calculator, it doesn't really matter. I think it might be, if I was doing it by hand, I would probably break it up. I would break it up into terms. There's a plus there, so there's two terms, so I would distribute, and I'd have a sum of two integrals, and then each of those integrals I could factor into a phi part and a theta part. But I don't want to make you wait to see me do the whole thing by hand. That would probably be very boring. So I will try it on my calculator, and you want to see me do it by hand? Come to my office. I'll be happy to oblige. Calculator says 25/12 of 3 pi plus 40, for whatever that's worth. If I ask it to give me an approximation, it says it's about 103. Really 102.968 something. Okay. Okay, so that's the alternative to doing the boundary arcs, is take the flux of the curl. So, I guess the trade-off is sometimes the surface is easier to parameterize than the boundary arcs, but the cost is you have to do lots of partial derivatives and cross products, right? You have to do the curl. And then you have to do a cross product here. Although if you've done the parameterization before, maybe you already know what it is. Depends on the situation. Which is the shortest path to victory? So let's see. What should we say? I guess this would finally be step four here, right? Where we put everything all together. So, let's see. Any questions or horrible errors? Get something different on your calculator? Teaching university physics too. The physicists really are lazy. They hate having to do these kinds of integrals. Whenever possible, they find some kind of symmetry so that when some kind of integral like this comes up with the electromagnetic fields, they have a way to hopefully basically turn an integral into something where it's basically a constant. And they can just multiply some things instead of having to actually do an integral.
So I see a lot of things in the physics textbook where they write an integral, but then they have some symmetry argument so that they don't have to actually do an integral. Okay. Anyways, that's what we did. We computed the circulation of this field around this loop. The number came out positive, which indicates the field was generally more with the loop than it was against the loop. If the field was against the loop, it would be going back this way in places, pushing against our loop.
Now, divergence theorem.
So I introduced it yesterday. Just didn't do any examples of it. Okay.
So let's have basically the same thing, that octant, but now we'll have a 3D region. We'll have all the stuff inside the octant.
Basically the same picture, but I'm going to label it differently. Okay, so I have this eighth of a sphere of radius 5. Okay, and so attempt to illustrate that. And W is what's inside this eighth of the sphere. Okay.
Now, we could have, where's that field? Same field. Now, before we asked, what is the circulation of the field around those front three quarter circle arcs, right? And it came out positive, right? About 103. Now, the divergence theorem is regarding not circulation, but it's asking about net flow in or out of a region. Okay, so we have our eighth of a ball here, right? Sometimes people use the word ball for the 3D region to distinguish from the 2D spherical surface that goes around the ball. Mm-hmm. So we have our eighth of a ball, and the question is, okay, with this field on net, does it represent a flow out of this eighth of a ball or flow into it? And how much? Okay. If it's positive, that's net flow out. And the fancy word is flux, right? Okay, so we're asking, what is the flux through the boundary, right? The only way to get in or out of this region W is to go through the boundary.
Okay. So this would be another flux integral,
but don't worry, we don't have to actually do another flux integral here.
Okay. Now, unlike with arbitrary surfaces, we can't pick an orientation here. The orientation is given by the convention that n points outside of the region.
So our convention is that positive flux means flow out. So then to have this formula for the flux integral, we have to have that normal vector n point out. So you imagine here on that back face of the sphere, there's a normal vector pointing out. Out here on the front, it's doing something like this. I'm not sure how good I am at drawing it. Down on the bottom face, right, it's pointing down. Right? These, I guess all these arrows should be about the same length, because they're all supposed to be unit vectors. So this one here is, I'm thinking of the bottom face of this octant of a ball. And so that one's pointing down. So there's four faces, right? So if you wanted to compute the flux directly, you would have to do a surface integral over each of the four faces. There's three back faces, three quarter disks, and then there's that front face, which is an eighth of a sphere. So you'd have to do four integrals, right? We have to do four of those. We don't want to do that. Right? We're going to use the divergence there. Also known as Gauss's theorem. For this particular vector field, Gauss's theorem actually makes this really easy. In fact, I can tell you right now, the divergence is just going to be just the constant 1. So all we're going to get is 1 times 1 eighth of the volume of a ball of radius 5. So I claim this should be 1 eighth times 4 thirds pi times 5 cubed. So what would that be? Let's see. I guess 125 pi over 6. Okay. Well, I'm not going to prove the divergence theorem, so I won't answer this question. But I will say, why has it come out this way? Well, okay. So the divergence of F, right, which is also suggestively written as this dot product with the nabla, is just where you take the derivative of the first component with respect to the first coordinate variable, x. So x derivative of x component plus y derivative of y component plus z derivative of z component. So this one works out pretty easily. That's why I was able to do it in my head.
Right? It's one.
Okay. So this integral along W of the divergence of the field times dV, well, that's just going to be, the divergence just is 1 everywhere in this case, so we're just integrating dV, so it's just the volume of W, which is 1/8 the volume of a ball of radius 5. So I was able to short circuit a lot of the calculus there. I just used some geometry. I could do the integral, right? Use spherical coordinates. Use the dV for spherical coordinates and all that. But I was able to get around it because there was so much symmetry, you might say. What about another field where it's not so easy? Okay, how about something that actually has a non-trivial divergence, right? So, okay, we can do that. How about this? X squared plus y squared, y and 2z. There. Not quite as trivial. I can't do this one in my head. All right. The divergence of this one would be the x derivative of x squared plus y squared plus the y derivative of y plus the z derivative of 2z. And given that, if I wanted to know the flux through the boundary of W of G, then I would have to compute this thing. So that would be one of those triple integrals that you'd want to do with spherical coordinates, right? Okay. So let's see about that. We've got our eighth of a ball there. So rho is going to go from 0 to 5. Phi is going to go from 0 to 90 degrees like before. Theta is going to go from 0 to 90 degrees like before. And we're going to have 2x plus 3, which will be 2 times rho times the sine of phi times the cosine of theta plus 3. Doing the spherical coordinates, then I need the spherical volume differential, which has that rho squared sine phi in it. And then, let's see here. My intent here is to have rho on the outside, phi in the middle, and then theta on the inside, so I should match that. Something you can do with spherical coordinates. Doable, maybe not in your head, though. And again, maybe you want to do it with a calculator. Let's see. I like to save myself a little time on the calculator. Instead of trying to find the theta or the phi, I often just use, or the rho for that matter, I'll just use, okay, let's pretend rho, phi, and theta are x, y, and z, right? The letters aren't important, right? And my calculator has x, y, and z in a convenient place. And again, you want to see the exact thing I typed into my calculator? Come to my office sometime. We'll talk calculators. You want to see me do this by hand? I can do that by hand for you too. Just find a good time to have an extended one-on-one conversation with me about it. See if I get something reasonable. Okay. So I got 1125 eighths of a pi. And apparently that's roughly 442. Really 441.786, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. So with this field also, the flow is on net out of our 1/8 of a ball. And we can quantify it by saying the flux is 442. Okay, so that's a typical way that you actually take advantage of the divergence theorem. Turn a difficult flux integral into a hopefully easier triple integral. Sometimes you have to work the other way, and sometimes the region W is really hard, but the boundary is actually easier. In that situation, you would want to go the other way. So if your field happens to be the divergence of another, or sorry, if you have a function and you know it's a divergence of some field, then you could run this backwards and turn a difficult triple integral into an easier surface integral. But that happens less often, right? Because you have to have something right here, you have to know, okay, this is a divergence, I guess. Okay, you could do it. You need an extra step. Basically, you have to say, okay, given a function here, how can I cook up a field that has divergence equal to that function? There's kind of a cheap way to do that, actually. So, let me mention that. I think I photographed this, but I'll check. Yep. So here's the cheap way to use the divergence theorem the other way. Okay. So let's say somebody gives you this integral. You're having trouble figuring out the boundaries for W, right? But in the sense that it's hard to set up this triple integral correctly. but maybe the W's boundary is given to you, right? Maybe somebody gives you some parametric surface, like one of those donuts I gave you or something. And then they ask you, I want you to integrate blah, blah, blah inside that donut. All right. Well, either you have to figure out the correct bounds for that triple integral in some coordinate system, or use this little trick here. Take an integral of that function with respect to x and put that in the x component of a field. Okay? And then just leave the y components and z components 0. See, the trick here is the x derivative of this thing will just give you back lowercase f. So the x derivative of the x component will be what you need to be, and the y derivative of the y component and the z derivative of the z component won't mess anything up. So you're good to go. So now you can run the divergence theorem backwards. So now this triple integral becomes a double integral. It may not be an easy one, right? You may have to do the cross product of some partial derivatives to some parameterization of some surface, but maybe you couldn't figure out the bounds at all for W, so this is better than the alternative. And again, here, you'll have to figure out which way end point. End points out. So again, yeah, maybe W is some funny region like a donut or something. How do we draw a donut? Kind of like this. You could have something like that, and if you were given a parameterization of the boundary surface, then all you'd have to do is figure out whether you do plus or minus the cross product of those partial derivatives with respect to the parameters. This would be the typical situation where you could use that. You have some parametric formula for the boundary, and then you have to deal. And then instead of doing an integral over the region inside, you just work on the boundary. So now you have, if u and v are your parameters, then this NDA thing is known up to a plus or minus, right? So you can do it.
Okay.
So that's the other way you could use the divergence theorem. Now, I'm not going to require you to do any homework on this because I didn't want there to be too much homework you were all trying to get done at the last minute before I collected on Monday or last class day. So if you want some practice with this stuff, go to 6.8 in the book, right, and try some problems. Right? Maybe you won't have time to do it by Monday, but certainly time to do it before the final exam, right? Any questions? All right, well, tomorrow and Monday in class, I'll take questions on whatever. All right, so think about what you want to ask.